If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
And we are back on Paul Listick Behind the Curtain, shifting gears a little bit, although in some strange way we're not. You'll understand as we talk. We're going to be talking about the musical Parade, which is coming to the CIBC Theater, thanks to Broadway in Chicago. It's going to play only from August 5th to the 17th, so you'll want to get your tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. We'll tell you about the play, but first let me introduce you to my guest, Chris Shire, who plays Governor Slayton in this show. And just in case somebody is watching or listening and says, wait, that sounds like a real governor's name. Yeah, it was. This is a true story, actually. We're going to find out what this is all about. Chris, who plays the governor in this show, just a word of background on you, Chris, not that you need to know, but our viewers might. Long background. You've been doing this stuff, I think, since the early 90s, and you've been in everything from Mamma Mia to Lend Me a Tenor, The Book of Mormon, while you were on a national tour. You're also Canadian, in addition to being an American, and you've done Assassins and Les Mis and just on and on. Now, I have to tell you, your bio lists certain television credentials of yours. Yeah. I had ones I liked better. And so rather than the ones that they list for you, here's what I like about your background. That you were also part of The New Outer Limits, Smallville, love that show, yeah. Monk and The Practice, where you played somebody who eerily reminds us of Hannibal Lecter.
Yes.
Why that's not in your program bio, I don't know, but I'm putting it out there.
Thank you very much. There was a period of time in my film and television career that I was playing a lot of people with some mental challenges, and you try to humanize those people as best you can.
Well, the good news is that in Parade, my first question is, tell people who don't know the show. A lot of people just say, are we in a parade? Well, yeah. Kind of. But it is, there is a parade involved. But talk to people about the parade. And the truth is, here you get to pay a politician who's a good guy, I think.
Yes. Yes. He initially starts out as wanting nothing to do with the case. And then 2 years later, after receiving a lot of correspondence from people outside of Georgia saying you have to relook at this case, he finally realizes it's important to put the truth above himself. So it becomes a sobering, one man's sobering journey of enlightenment in some respects. But Parade is based on a true story about Leo Frank and his wife, Lucille. Leo Frank, who ran the pencil factory in 1913 in Atlanta, Georgia. He was a Jewish man from the north in Brooklyn, and he was accused, tried, and sentenced of this horrible, horrible crime. And in his pursuit of pursuing his innocence, he came across a lot of anti-Semitism. Georgia at the time had lost the war. We start the play, the musical, about 50 Civil years War Day, after.
Right?
Yeah. About 50 years after the Civil War. And so they were, the men at the time were feeling emasculated. They were angry that this Jewish man was instructing and responsible for their children these young girls having to basically work to support the family. So they were not in a great place to begin with. And then basically, you know, the themes in this show, just the dangers of mob mentality. But the theme that stands out for me in this show is the resilience of love under dire circumstances. The wife, who is the heart of the piece, Lucille. But aside from all of that, it's an amazing piece to see. Beautifully written by Alfred Urey. The music is absolutely gorgeous. Jason Robert Brown. People who come to see the music who don't know anything about the piece, they are staggered by it. They're leaping to their feet at the end of it. The ebbs and flows of, you can sense that the audience is very, very, very tentative to listening to what's going on. And for the moment you think, oh, they're not interested. They don't want to be here, but they're so involved in it. Anyways, we feel like maybe it's more relevant. I wish it wasn't so relevant, And without getting into, you know, politics, but it feels that it's mirroring a lot of what's happening right now.
Well, that's what happens today. I mean, in our first half of the show, we talked about Fiddler on the Roof, and I got into a conversation with the cast about the issues there. It doesn't matter that it was going on back in the early 1900s like this. The truth is these issues continue to resonate.
Yeah.
This show first premiered on Broadway in 1988. It's been around for a while.
1998.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
And then comes back, you know, put Ben Platt in something and we'll revive it, right? So it comes back in 2023 with Ben Platt and does this national tour. Now, in your role as the governor, a friend of mine who's been on this show, friend of Behind the Curtain, Sean Alan Krill was in that role.
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you know Sean, and did you see him in the role at any point?
I do know Sean. I never saw Sean in the role, but I got to know Sean. I was working opposite Carolee Carmello in Mamma Mia on Broadway in September 2007, was there for a year. And when I was leaving, Sean came in to replace me as Sam. And that's how I got to know Sean. And then I've known Sean on again, off again. But then, and he seems to never stop working, God bless. And then he got this in the revival, which was 2 years ago, I think.
2023.
Yes. And did incredibly well with the show. And then he ended up getting Floyd Collins. I think he was just.
And we just recently here in Sunday in the Park with George that he did in concert. And by the way, we could play geography all day because interviewed Carolee recently for Kimberly Akimbo, but I went to school with Greg Edelman, high school. Okay. Who of course, you know, they were married for many years, so lots of connections.
Yes, yes. Well, Ben Platt and I worked together in Book of Mormon when it opened at the Bank of America Theater in December 2013 in Chicago.
And I did a show called Behind the Curtain with Ben and Nick Rouleau and all sorts of people. That I guess you weren't selected for that show, but we sat with a live studio audience and the cast and Pierce was in there, and it was just we had such great fun. I'm sorry, I'm going to yell at them for not picking you all those years ago.
That's okay. That was a blast. I did that show for 3 years on tour.
And I love it, and it's always coming back, and I always love seeing it. And in fact, I interviewed the writers, right, Matt and Trey, about all of that, and they signed a frog for me. Well, that's another show. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about more about this show. So Mary Fagan is the name of the victim in this show, and one would say, well, that let's be. I mean, I think we can say she's murdered. That's what happens.
Yeah.
And yet some would say, well, then I guess we don't see her, but we do see her.
We do see her. We meet her briefly in the very beginning. There is an actual parade, Memorial Day parade. Yeah. We do meet her. There's a moment when she's on the trolley with her friend Frankie. We see her go to get, you know, to collect her pay, and then shortly after that, it becomes a crew crime story. It sadly it doesn't stay light and happy for very long.
And yet it's a musical. I think people are always shocked when you take stories like this, you know, sort of dark in their content, and you say, and it's a musical. Now, you get an important number of the show called Pretty Music, and as I recall that, and Sean doing it, that means you're a tenor, right? Because I think that song is written for a tenor.
Well, we're baritenors. I'll speak for me. I'm a baritenor. But Pretty Music, it's an interesting piece to do in the second act because there's wolves at the door. I mean, stuff is going on. And it's light on the outside, but the inner world that's going on is very bound, and people are I'm concerned, the governor's concerned about making the right decision. But he and his wife Miss Sally were known to entertain, and he was known as a foxtrotter. I mean, he could foxtrot, so we got to put that in the show. It comes at just the right time, just to lighten things just a little bit. And then immediately we get into, you know, what's really going on. And then Lucille comes to visit him at the mansion, which basically provokes him into right action. And then that's where we take another part of the show.
Do you think it's better? I mean, this was a true case. All you got to do is Google this and you'll find out everything that actually happened, some of which is shocking and stunning. That being said, do you prefer people come and say, hey, don't research this, show up, let it unfold? Or would you rather people, I guess like me, who show up knowing, I know how this ends, I know what happens, and I'm going to watch it play out?
You know, I would say both. I think for some who come, who know the show, who know the story, I think they want to see what the composer and the book writer has done with it to tell the story. You know what the end, for those who know the story, you know what's going to happen. But there are beautiful moments of hope in this piece, even under these dire circumstances that are absolutely gorgeous and moving. For those who don't know the story, I say come and you know, spoiler alert, you know, stuff happens that isn't so great. And very
and
sad.
I'll tease it a little bit more. For what ultimately happens with Leo, I won't say what it is that part, will we see that?
You will see an assimilation of that.
Okay.
You will see a theatrical, like it's beautifully designed and directed by Michael Arden, who won a Tony for Best Revival and Best Director 2 years ago. Who recently won a Tony for Maybe Happy Ending. But he designs it beautifully. He's given certainly you see, yes. And then there's a lot of projections in the back. So it almost becomes like a docu-musical a little bit.
Drama, docu-musical. Oh, I like that concept.
Right.
So Chris, as I was doing, I mean, I've seen the show before, but I was doing a little homework on its history, originally directed by Hal Prince. And I was intrigued to find out that the original request to write the music for the show went to Stephen Sondheim. He said no. What do you know about that?
He did. What I know is that he had just finished Passion. And I think he was just kind of at his wit's end with telling a dramatic story in that sort of similar period that he said, thank you, but I'm going to pass. And then I forget who it was exactly. Was it Alfred Urey or someone, an associate of Alfred Urey, suggested Jason Robert Brown. And I think he was.
No,
like,
it was actually my reading was that it was the daughter of.
Oh, yes. The daughter of Daisy.
Yes.
Yes. That's how we have Daisy in the show. That's correct. That's correct. Yes.
Thank God I knew something.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me. And suggested Jason Robert Brown. I think he was like 23, 24 at the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I refer to this as his magnum opus. He may not refer to it that way, but I do. It is absolutely glorious.
And the follow-up here is, imagine Sondheim had said yes. So we're doing this decades earlier in his career. So we haven't, you know, as you say, he had just done Passion, which, by the way, also starred Greg Edelman, a mutual friend we talked about earlier, along with Don and other people. But what would this show, how different would this show? You see, when I think of this show, I'm thinking, all right, Sweeney Todd, Parade, all right, Sondheim, what are you going to do here? How different would this show look?
Wow, that's a good question. That's a good question, Paul. I don't know how to answer that question without possibly.
Would it remain dark? Would it have been?
It definitely would have been dark. It definitely would have had dissonance. It definitely would have been very challenging to sing to the ensemble stuff. I'm curious what his moment of pretty music would have been like. I think it would have been very good. It's Sondheim. And I think it would have been, though, it would have been different, maybe not the same,
Well, can I give you, I have a theory here. He goes on to write Assassins.
Yes.
Now there is a book. If you haven't read it, I just interviewed the author the other day. We'll air that down the line. Richard Shook is the author and the book is called How Sondheim Can Change Your Life. If you're familiar, with that book, recently came out last year, but he writes about Assassins and he makes a great point, which is to say Sondheim was not about the history of it. He wasn't about even the motivation. We know the motivations of these people.
Yeah.
It's about the drama of how it plays out. So here we are with another story that would have been Sondheim writing history. And so yet he would have locked in on something. It wouldn't have been like, how do I tell the story, as much as it would have been a deeper point that he would have had to make, the drama of the moment or something like that. That doesn't sound far-fetched. I think that's what
I would agree with that completely. And I would also say that getting to know Jason Robert Brown is that he's been working on Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Oh, so good. It was, And that premiered here at the Goodman Theater.
Yes, that's right. And I think they're still finessing the script and they're looking for a venue to open.
And if you didn't see it, by the way, when it opens, go see it. It is stunning.
Thank you. I'm also hoping to throw my hat in the ring for Jim Williams, but that's a whole other story.
Go for it.
Anyway, it's a good, but I know that someone had said, oh my God, Jason R. Brown, he loves a good trial, you know, true crime story type thing.
Yeah, you have it there too.
Which is why he's drawn to this. But that's interesting about Sondheim. I think, yeah, it would have been, you know, listen, everything works out the way it works out. And this worked out beautifully. I wonder, God bless, if, you know, he was still with us, if he would say, God, I woulda, shoulda, coulda, you know, in hindsight, I don't know. I don't know if he ever came to see Parade when it first came out in 98. I don't know.
I'll guess he did, because, right, he probably saw everything.
Yeah, you know, I would love to have picked his brain, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, did you ever meet him?
No. But there are people, I worked with Nancy Opel in mm-hmm. something called Kirby Widow, and she worked yeah. with him, and she had amazing things to say about him. He's a yeah. brilliant man. Brilliant.
I did a interview about Ravinia just the other day, but I'll quickly tell the story again. I met him once at Ravinia. They did a 10-year series of Sondheim shows, and he would come to some of them. And so there was one I'd heard he was coming, and I brought something with me, and I run into him. And I said, Stephen, and he looks, and he was very nice, very cordial and stuff. But as we're talking, because I brought up Greg Edelman, mutual friends, just to try mm-hmm. and create a connection, and he sees I've got something in my hand, and he goes, I'm not signing anything. I don't want to sign anything. I said, okay, fair enough, but let me just tell you what this is. I said, when Goodman did the trial run, or, you know, premiere, opening, whatever, of Bounce, which then became a million other named shows, a bombed here. Richard Kind plays this stockbroker guy, and he has these stock certificates. And at one point, he throws them up in the air, and one of them landed. I always sit in the front row. One of them lands on my lap in the front row, and this is it. And he looked at me and went, that I'll sign. So nice. I thought, and thank goodness that he did. Let me go back to Parade, if I can, for a moment, and just ask, do you think when people walk out, it's one thing to walk out of Hairspray, where, you know, you have a message, but at the same time, you get to walk out happy. How do people walk out of it? We're not giving things away unless you choose to, but how do people walk out of this? Are they happy? Are they down? Are they humming along? How are audiences leaving?
You know, it's a real mixed bag. I've been hearing that a lot of people are overwhelmed. You see people afterwards asking for autographs, and they sometimes have a difficult time getting their wits together again, because they're still going through something and they're so grateful to have seen it. Yeah. And others who are stunned by the story, who don't know the story going in, others who thank God this is here, and that we're knowing about this story, and hopeful that maybe this, you know, in some as a moral lesson, we'll hope to teach. But mostly, I sense that they're thankful. I mean, at the end there, and there's certain audiences different. Atlanta, because it takes place in Atlanta, when we were there, we performed for 4,000 people every night, and
Was that an eerie feeling? Or, I mean, here you are, right, in the sight of where someone
is. Not eerie. I was just more concerned that they were going to rake me over the coals for my dialect. And I worked very hard on my dialect, but I thought, okay. And then I would leave, and they're like, hey, good accent, Governor. I'm like, thank you. But they know some of the inside jokes that Alfred Uri put in there and stuff. And so they were getting all that, and very present. You could feel them very present. Or L.A., where they, you know, it's like they were hungry for some form of entertainment, and they're, even though it's dark, they're like, they're with you, and they're present. You can hear them. Where other audiences are very quiet, like I said, and listening to every single word. And then when we're done, they're just like up on their feet and like, wah! So it's, I think people are grateful that they saw it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I guess, again, these days, you know, walking out, realizing probably with some, I can see myself doing that with my partner, walking out and just saying, we're living this. This could happen again. You know, I mean, history does, as Mark Twain once said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme.
Yeah. 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 Sadly, like I said, I wish it wasn't so relevant. I wish it was more of a historical piece. Like, look how we used to be.
Yeah. Do you prefer playing a role like this, you know, in a show like this, or when I, you know, if I pull you out and go back to Mamma Mia, where you're Sam, along with Carol Lee as Donna, I think she was in Mamma Mia. I mean, do you sort of say, well, that's kind of fun. I love that because we're all just having a great time. Or you say, no, give me this one. I want to sink my teeth into something deeper like this.
I had been doing
somewhere in between the two.
Well, this particular show, Parade, when it came across my agent's desk to audition for it initially, I had been doing several, which I was very grateful to be doing, several Hallmark movies. Mm-hmm. And they're of a certain elk, right? They're of a certain genre. It's lighter. Nothing really bad happens in Hallmark. Some conflict. Romantic comedies are fun to do.
But in the end, they always get together. They're happy.
Everything works out. And you know, it's a place for people to go, right? It's a place for people to kind of, you know, my God, there's just so much craziness going on. Let's just enjoy this lighter thing. But so when this came to me to audition for, I was immediately, yes, I want to be a part of this. I in some small way, I want to be in service to telling the story. And I'm glad it worked out because the first, you know, when I got my call back and went into New York, it was the first time I had been in a room in a very long time since we were shut down. So I was very excited to be there. But in my head, I'm thinking, I just want to meet the creative team. I don't, you know, it's okay if it doesn't work out that I get it or not. I'm glad that it did work out that I did get it because I feel very, very fortunate every day.
Did you audition for the role of the governor, or did you not know what role?
So
you
no, I auditioned for the role of the governor, but I did not know that he danced. I had no idea that he danced in the second because I had not seen.
Are you a dancer?
I can move. I can move. I can pick up choreography. I don't know if I'm a dancer, but I can move. And if you gave me like a, you know, 4-part harmony, I would lose my mind. But you give me some choreography, I'm good. I'm good. I'll learn it. I'll figure it out. But I didn't know they danced. So when they were like, hey, when it was getting to the point of them saying in the audition, okay, we're going to do a little choreography, I was like, maybe this is going to work out. Maybe.
I love it.
And Lauren and Cree, who are our choreographers, are beautiful people, lovely people.
And a fairly large cast as well.
Huge cast. And we don't see this these days. We don't see a big, big cast anymore. And the sound that comes from us, I mean, people often say, you guys, the performances are outstanding, but the sound, the voices in this show are, I mean, I'd love to speak with you afterwards when you see the show.
I will do my best to hang around and say hi to you. I'm really looking forward to it. It's been a long time since I've seen this show, and I'm glad it's coming back. So this is going to be good. I guess finally, before I let you go, but you are coming back to Chicago. So as opposed to telling you things you need to do, an architectural boat tour being one of them. But when you come back, if there are people in the cast who haven't done that, what are you taking them to eat? Is there about Garrett's caramel corn, cheese corn? What are you doing?
Oh my God. Well, definitely we got to try the pizza, the deep dish, right? I mean, And also, I'm blanking on the names of them, but there were jazz clubs, soul music.
Green Mill?
Yes, Green Mill, that's it. Must take them there if they haven't been.
And to Buddy Guy's, by the way. Buddy Guy has a club.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Is this recent?
No, he's had this forever. Whether he might be retiring soon, but he was just in the movie Sinners, right? That little, if you saw,
giving something
away, but he's a surprise thing at the end of the movie Sinners. But yeah, Buddy Guy has his own club up here.
Well, definitely there as well. And then also I've done 2 architectural tours, but I'll take people on more. You just can't get enough of that. I love those architectural tours.
Yeah.
It's very informative.
The boat or the walking tours as well?
Both. Love it.
Yeah. And in fact, just yesterday I did an interview, we'll air it later, about the Fine Arts Building. They just came out with a coffee table book about the Fine Arts Building built in 1896, something like that.
Right.
But recently restored. It's where the Studebaker Theater is. The same building used to be owned by the Studebaker brothers. They made cars there. They assembled cars there. The famous Studebakers back in the 20s and such.
Okay.
And now, just a few weeks ago, Liz Calloway, who was on my show, did a Sondheim concert there. And so there's just great stuff. So when you're here, and they do, the architecture tour does tours of that building. But let me know as well, because I can arrange something for you.
Thank you. Appreciate
it's absolutely
that.
Fabulous. So can't wait to have you back in Chicago. Can't wait to see Parade. For those of us watching us now, just starting to have a personal conversation, get tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com August 5th to the 17th at the CIBC Theater. Once again, Chris, good to see you. Break legs when you're here. Can't wait to see you on stage.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.